Hello and welcome to Sustain, the podcast where we talk about sustaining open source for the long haul. Who are we? Where did we come from? Where are we going? Where is the proper Jupyter notebook that we should actually use to understand how we could do that all better? Excellent questions for today. Very excited to talk to you. I am your host, Richard Litauer, solo hosting today. Hope that's okay. If you really would prefer to hear other people, send me a line, podcast@sustainoss.org. Never asked that before, but why not? But my guest today should fill all the space needed that my other hosts have left me. So I'm very excited to have her on. We have Malvika Sharon. Malvika, how are you doing?
Doing really well.
Excellent. It is really cool to have you on. We first met a few months ago at a funder meeting for data sciences, research, academic software and stuff. But I think we actually previously met online at some point to talk about the Turing Way, which is where you work. So you are the senior researcher and open research and community manager at the Turing Way. And you're also the co-director of OLS, which is previously Open Life Science. We can't do two things at once. So number one, what is the Turing Way?
Yeah, just want to go back to when we first met. I think I met you online and I met you in person, but I didn't recognize you until you started to talk. I'm like, you are.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, so you do have like a very familiar voice in my network. People listen to you a lot. And there were a lot of people you have interviewed and I asked them for tips and they all talked about you. They talked about Paul, how amazing you both are, very professional. So thank you for making our days and commutes more entertaining.
Sure.
Talking about the Turing Way, Turing Way is a book, a community collaborative effort in the space of open science and data science. It was founded by Kirsty Whitaker in 2019. I joined her later that year as a community manager. Been working in this project for now about 4 years. I am a co-lead now for the project and lots of evolution have happened. And we have been working with a really great group of team members and the community. And it's a joy place for all of us. I'm very excited to talk about it with you today.
What is it?
What is it? Yeah, it is. It is quite difficult to explain it. So the project started as a book. It was always created in the open on GitHub with a group of people who wanted to make data science more open, accessible, reproducible, critical, collaborative, inclusive, kind, all kind of good things that we want data science to be for the world. The project was launched in 2019 at the Collaboration Workshop of Software Sustainability Institute with 3 chapters. And the book has since expanded into 5 guides, 300 chapters, 450 co-authors, 5,000 monthly users all around the world. And of course, the book itself is a thing that people look at and come to work on to read. Once they are there, there's a community which is absolutely wonderful. They are having conversations about practices that they want to promote in the world. They are activists. They are talking about changing incentive system, recognition system, building alternative models for open scholarship, making world more accessible, talking about accessibility of all forms. This is a place where I continue to learn about different things. I never saw myself a person in AI, but now just by being around people who are so passionate about AI and ethics and talking about all the good things as well as all the harmful things AI is doing in the world. So this is definitely a place where different communities convene and exchange their ideas. And that's definitely a space that I feel the Turing Way has been occupying in open science.
Excellent. So very much open science today. Now, when you talk about a book, you don't mean a hardcover, boring, stale, leather-bound book that's on a shelf somewhere. We're talking about a Jupyter notebook. It's a documentation book that's online. It's really accessible at the-turing-way.netlify.app.index.html. So it's like an online guide. It's very much a Redox type thing, right?
Yeah, it's a Jupyter book. It's a 21st century book. It's supposed to be 21st century book. We had hoped that people would be using Jupyter notebook features a lot in there. You know, it's a small microcosm of Wikipedia per se, where people have curated practices that we should all talk about and learn about and promote about. And it's also an evidence that different organizations can show to their own organization and talk about the importance of practices and investment in it, right? So because this requires a lot of work, it needs to exist, it needs to involve different groups of people, it needs to have community manager and project manager. yeah, so there's a whole open source that's happening in the project. The project itself is built on a lot of open source technology. There's a lot of advocacy in open science that the book is doing. The book is a hard word to explain for the Turing way. It's definitely not hardcover, but it could be something else in 5 years. And we're very curious to see where this is going to go.
So I'm looking at the table of contents. I see a guide for reproducible research, a guide for project design, for communication, for collaboration, and for ethical research, and then a community handbook. So I guess my first harder question is that I love that it's open source itself, that it's all written collaboratively online using GitHub. That's amazing. And that you're using the idea of, let's all be transparent, let's work on this together as a community. I'm not seeing a guide for open source. So I know that this is for data science. Can you tell me where the Venn diagrams of the content around open source match up with data science?
I would say the Turing way is a sneaky open source. When you come into the Turing way, we don't expect that you already know about open source or you see yourself as an open source practitioner. But once you come into the Turing way, there are community meetings that are happening. There are collaborative events that are happening. There are work on GitHub. And people start to learn about different things that people in open source communities do. And just by the nature of stepping into this world, they are now part of open source community before they even understood that this is an open source project. And also the side effect of that is that these people are not entirely Turing Way community members. They come from other communities and other projects, and they can take these practices back into their own work. So the Turing Way is promoting these open source ways of working. We don't talk about open source itself because we kind of have this assumption throughout the book that the project that you're working on, no matter what kind of contributor you are in data science, it's your responsibility to make sure the project is done reproducibly, it is open, it is collaborative, and here's how you can do it. But we also understand there's resistance about open science and open source in places such as people working in sensitive data, in government, in health, in private companies. And we want them to use this project as well. We want them to promote open source in the way that they can, but also understanding the limitation that they have to navigate. So we do have a chapter on open science, open source, open practices. We have just designed this book with unspoken rule that, oh, we think that you are going to love open science and open source, and you're going to do it throughout your work. And we understand that some places you might not be able to do it. So here is a FAIR principle that you can apply.
Et cetera, et cetera. Okay, cool. So very much, much more from the open perspective of this is all open work. It's all related. It's all interstitial. It's all interconnected. And if you're doing open science, open source should be part of that because it leads to better reproducibility, et cetera, et cetera. So that's lovely. There's one question I have now I'm going to ask, which is why Turing Way?
Yeah, it's a historical name. It's sort of comes from a story that Kirsty told me. So Kirsty Whitaker, who's a director of tools, practices, and systems at the Alan Turing Institute, she joined as a research fellow here. And she was working with another person called Martin O'Reilly, who's the director for research software engineering group at the Institute. And they were talking about, what do we want this book to become? And they wanted to make practices available for people that promotes reproducibility in all kind of work. And they said that if we can't do it at the Alan Turing Institute, which is the National Institute for Data Science, who else can? And therefore, they gave this name, the Turing Way. And at the time when they wrote the Turing Way, they were thinking about this way or that way. And then I joined and we're like, okay, let's imagine what this way looks like. And we changed the way as a journey, as in that it's not about the right way or wrong way. Here's all the things that you can do. And let's take one step at a time and enjoy this journey of making things as open as possible, as reproducible as possible, and as collaborative and inclusive as possible. So this reinterpretation has ended up becoming our logo now, which is Way, it's Pathway.
Cool. Okay, great. Now, when you talk about people get involved in the community of the Turing Way, so it's a Jupyter notebook. Does that mean that everyone who opens an issue is part of the community? Assume you have community calls and you have events and workshops. What does community look like? How is that shaped?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I remember Anna Cristalli, colleague of ours from Software Sustainability Institute, she used to talk about that, oh, sometimes it happens that you don't think you're part of a community, but you are part of a community. It's just someone didn't tell you that you are part of the community. So that's what I feel like happens in a lot of open source when people open an issue that they are not necessarily thinking about that I want to be part of this community. They're just random people who are kind enough to tell us that something should be improved. And I want to take my time and tell you what should be improved. And maybe I can offer you time to change that. And if we are welcoming enough, we are accessible enough, we are available enough to work with them, they want to work with us longer. And before they know it, maybe they just enjoyed this experience so much that they want to stay with us and do more things and bring their new ideas that wasn't initially part of the project. So often that's the case. And I wouldn't say that everybody who opens the GitHub issue becomes our community member, but I would like to think that everybody who's collaborating within the project is our community member. But also it's a self-identity thing. Do people recognize themselves as part of the community? We do have lots of community events, including bi-weekly collaboration cafe, where people who are doing different pieces of work within the Turing Way can come and work with each other. If they are new to the community, they can come and get onboarded in the project. We also have Book Dash, which is like a hackathon, a week-long event happening over different time zones. People collaborate on writing chapters, improving infrastructure, talking about practices, be creative. And we have been also hosting fireside chats, which are cross-community conversations about challenges without necessarily finding a solution for it. So we just came out of a yearly review meeting, and we've been reviewing what event we should keep, what event have we not done, where have we done better than last year, what do we want to improve. And we definitely think that there's a lot of workshops and trainings that community members are doing that needs to be sustained and supported, because there's also this part that we can't just write practices and assume that this is happening. We need to provide those spaces for people to learn about them and practice them and then bring it back into their own project. So yeah, there's always something new happening in the Turing Way, very emergent space, where Kirsty likes to talk about emergent strategy, which has been a huge source of inspiration for us in building the project and the community itself.
What do you mean by emergent strategy?
Emergent Strategy is a book written by Adrienne Mary Brown, who's an author, activist, facilitator who lives in the US and has been talking about social movement and activism for many, many years. And she wrote this book with few concepts that have become really integral to the Turing Way, promoted by Kirsty and promoted by some of our other community members in the Turing Way. And some of the concepts that are as simple as small is good, large is reflection of small, change is constant, trust the people, move at the speed of trust, what you pay attention to grows. So these are some of the concepts that she has talked about, and it's very much aligned with the kind of community that we want to build.
Well, I've just bought that at my local bookstore, so that's cool. Looking forward to reading that and taking a look. You mentioned sustainability of the projects. I have two questions there, which I want to ask, and I'm going to start with one of them, which is, how do you make the Turing Way sustainable as an open source project? Are you grant funded, hard money, soft money? Is it donations works for you? And how much staff do you have?
Yeah, it is a very good question in the current climate where open source funding is so scarce. We're very fortunate that the project has been from the very beginning funded by the Alan Turing Institute as an organization. The Institute's mission is to promote data science for the social good. And the Turing Way is something that has become a flagship project. And my position has been funded from the very beginning from the Turing Institute. And we brought in another community manager now. We have a project manager, and these positions are fully funded by the Turing Institute. We also have part money coming from the Bridge AI, which is an Innovate UK program, which is about promoting AI skills in sectors where AI has not yet been fully adopted, but has high potential for growth. For example, in creative media or agriculture, food processing, transportation, manufacturing, and so on. We are currently having conversation about how do we support our community members? How do we bring in money that is flexible enough to be provided to the community? Currently, we do have budget that goes into Book Dash event where we can provide accessibility grant to our community members. Because we are a charity organization, we can't offer honoraria, which is quite possible in smaller nonprofit organizations. But we have other way to recognize our community members, at the same time, not minimizing the fact that there is the financial benefit that our community members can have if we have open source funding in different ways.
Alan Turing Institute is larger than I thought it was. I thought it was just a nonprofit that was set up, and it's not. It's a National Institute for Data Science and Artificial Intelligence from the UK itself. So you're funded by taxpayer money originally?
Yeah, quite a lot of that. We also got funding in the past from private industries. We have collaboration with organizations like Roche Diagnostic. We have collaboration with Accenture. We also have funding from universities. So we have a huge university network. But yeah, large amount of money is government funded, definitely taxpayers' money. And therefore, the conversation around open source and open science is so much more important for us.
It's also easier. Like, are there any times where like we want to take the Alan Turing way one way, but then other people don't want that? It's like, no, you're just here to make data science easier for everyone, right? You don't have to worry so much about political movements.
Totally. It does make sense for us to talk about the Turing way as a public good, as things that is for the people, by the people, and be very honest about that space. That's why I was saying it's a joy place, because who else gets to do that without worrying about writing grants after grants?
I'm imagining a hypothetical history now where Abraham Lincoln was also Alan Turing, and it's quite interesting. But anyway, moving on, you talked about the projects themselves being sustainable, that are using this project, that are using the documentation that you've written, that are joining the calls and learning more about how to do data science better. What is your process for learning and taking in feedback about projects that use the Turing way to show that it makes them more sustainable?
So for 4 years, I worked with a lot of committee members who would write me emails saying that, oh, I used your project to show it to my organization, and now we have built a version of it for my own organization. We also had organizations like eScience Center from the Netherlands who said, we have an internal guide, but we think the Turing way is more open source and we think it is more maintainable by community. Therefore, we've decided that every 6 months we're going to create our practices and put it in the Turing way. And then we have some sort of interoperability between different projects that is happening with the Turing way. We have a project called Environmental Data Science Book, which is a sister project of the Turing Institute, where Alejandro Cook and his team, they decided to write case studies in executable notebooks from the environmental data science research. And they said, we're not going to write about practices because Turing Way is already doing it. What we will do is link it out to the Turing Way without worrying about writing about practices, so we can completely focus on case studies. So there are many, many examples like this. And a lot of these anecdotes were in my email because someone wrote it to me, and it's really joyful for me. But I can't talk about this in an impact report. And I got often asked about what is the impact of the Turing way. I'm like, oh, but you know, people are using it and people are citing it, but that is not the impact according to some people. I think that's quite impactful. So one of the things that became urgent for us is to capture these evidences more in public and get these organizations to talk about their experiences more in public. This year, I launched Practitioners Hub, which is the Turing way project, to work with organizations directly who are using the Turing way and spend 6 months with us and tell us what is the state of open science in their communities. How are people using open source? Has it been beneficial? What has been challenging? And I brought together 5 organizations. One is Office of National Statistics, British Antarctic Survey, Genomics England, DG Hall, and Energy System Catapults. These are 5 absolutely different sectors. And we had one expert from each of these organizations who was working with us over the 6 months. And towards the end, we all realized that we were facing the same kind of challenges, maybe from different angles, but we all have the culture problem. We have skill adoption problem. We have buy-in problem. We don't know how to consistently capture the impact. How do we tell our story in a way that people don't find open source intimidating? And there's also resistance from private organizations in terms of risk. How much appetite do they have for risk that they think is associated with open source? And these were very interesting conversations. We have released a set of case studies just last week, and these case studies talk about these practices. So now we've been able to tell those stories in the public and learn from them. And they all have shared with us how they have used the Turing way and what is the importance of Turing way for their organization. And we want to scale this effort by working with more organizations. And in fact, with organizations that haven't yet adopted the Turing way and bring it into their space and support some of the practices that they are trying to move forward.
Now, what do you mean by adopted the Turing way? Because as far as I can tell, it's a resource that you go read. Like, what does adopting mean?
When I say the Turing way, I mean adopted the practices of open, collaborative practices ethics, inclusive practices in data science. I've merged them into all as Turing web practice, but actually that's just a jargon that is in my head and isn't a reality and shouldn't be. Actually, we are trying to promote what other people are doing. It's just we have terminology or an umbrella under which we can put it.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. While I'm on that topic, you do have 300 chapters, but the chapters are also somewhat more like pages, right? They're individual items where you can sort of read a few subsections. Now, the Turing Way is very broad, but it's not always deep in the sense that, like, sometimes you can go a whole lot further down the rabbit hole of how do you do open science better, especially for each individual project. You must have had critics point this out to you before. What is your response to them when you hear that?
Yeah, it is a question that we get asked by a lot of people who are using the Turing Way. And let me give you the example of Energy Systems Catapult, where I was working with Stephen Hayden, where he has been working with energy sectors to support startups to promote open source, open practices, and bring open source and government work in the energy sector. And he did ask me this in the beginning, how do we customize this for energy sector? Because the energy sector may look at these practices and think that I don't relate with any of these and these don't matter to me. Whereas, of course, people who are working in the open source aspect within energy system do know that this is important. There are quite a lot of projects which are related to open data and open maps, which are trying to map some of the energy consumption across the UK, for example. And we did talk about it would be great if we work with organizations to build sector-specific case studies or user story that goes alongside the Turing Way. Because there's a reason why we have not gone deep into one domain or other, because there is a danger of leaving out some domains that need these practices more than the other. So we are really constantly thinking about how do we generalize some of the practices and how do we support domain experts in contextualizing these practices in their work. This is a work that I want to really take forward in 2024, 2025. However, of course, the example that I gave about environmental data science book is a good model that we can try to build in different research or different sectors too, where different leaders come together, write contextualized case studies and examples that their community should adopt.
I like that. How do you work with partners that do similar work? For instance, I know that RISA has guides that are available, Sustain has guides that are available on certain topics. Do you just make a new chapter in the Turing Way and say it's ours now? What do you do?
The Turing Way isn't supposed to reinvent the wheel. If there is something out there, the Turing Way is a place to amplify them. So we are not going to write what RISA has written, what Sustain has written, but it's a possible place where people are looking for information and they're always constantly talking about software sustainability or sustainability in general. So how can we make sure that people do come to the Turing Way, but they also go out finding these new resources or resources that pre-exist the Turing Way but hasn't received as much readership as the Turing Way does? So this is definitely a place where we can think about writing maybe a small chapter. What does Sustain Podcast do? How do they build podcasts? How can you make your own podcast? Who you can talk to learn about these practices? And there you go. Oh, here's the link of Richard Littauer that you can talk to. So I feel like the Turing Way has a non-competing interest. It's very much like, how can we exist in solidarity with our neighbors who are doing amazing job? And we have this amazing platform where we can amplify their work.
Awesome. So looking through it again now, I'm struck by, I want to learn about open science. Excellent. Here's a guide for open science. But it doesn't say a lot about why bother. You're already preaching to the converted. If they're there, like they have more information on how to do it better. Lord bless them. I'm curious, what do you have as far as resources or how do you think about convincing the unconvincible or, you know, working with those who just don't know what this whole thing is anyway?
Yeah, we do a lot and a lot of talks and workshops. And average, we have 50 talks per year and it's done by community members, team members. And these are the places where we actually do have that conversation. Why do we care about it? And we all have very different narrative for why each of us care about the Turing Way. I think of the Turing Way as an extension of digital commons that people should use and people should share, but they should also come and maintain and support. Whereas some people also look at the Turing Way and talk about how do we recognize different kinds of roles that exist within the Turing Way, but institutionally don't. For example, we have a group of people working on research infrastructure roles, which is recognizing different kinds of roles, such as research software engineering role, community management, research application management, data stewardship. And we've been able to really give spotlights to these kind of roles within the Turing Way. And we can go out and talk about it. This group of people have actually published a paper recently called Manifesto for Recognizing Research Infrastructure Roles. So there is a lot of activism that's happening within the Turing Way. These group of people go out and talk about it. We have another group of people who are translating and localizing the Turing Way into different languages. So Batul Almarzouk, Andrea Sanchez Tapia, and Melissa Black, also Alejandro Coca in the past, they were working with different groups of community and translating it into Arabic, Spanish, Portuguese. And of course, it's not text-to-text translation. They're also very driven by how important it is to reflect our cultural understanding and background into the knowledge that we are sharing with the community. So why should Middle Eastern communities care about the topics of open science, where open science isn't normalized? So Batul had given a lot of talks about the work, and then she goes out and says, you can become part of this community and we can translate this together and we can promote that together. And her work had an impact in the last couple of years. There's a lot of, would say, activism that really comes to my mind when I talk about community itself.
I like that subset of languages. I'm noticing that as a UK institution, Welsh wasn't included on the list. Is there a reason for that?
That's a very good point. My partner is Irish, and we see a lot of investment now in languages preservation. So it's a shortcoming that you're recognizing, which kind of shows that we have underrepresentation of Welsh-speaking people in our community. It isn't a reason. Honestly, it's very grassroots-driven. So people who have time and capacity to contribute will do it. But I can imagine translation and localization is so much work. If you ask me to translate something in Hindi, I just cannot do it. And I hope one day ChatGPT becomes smart enough and multilingual enough to allow us to do that better. But yeah, call your friends and tell us and help us translate it in Welsh and Irish.
So I like what you just said around people who have time and energy are able to contribute. That's like the problem at the heart of open source sustainability most of the time. What do you do to rise up or enable the careers of people who are using the Turing Way outside of just saying use it? Is there anything where they get badges or funds or recognition or citations as a result of using the Turing Way itself?
Yeah. Recognition is the first one. We want to make sure that all the contributions are recognized openly and meaningfully. So we have worked very hard to make sure that people do recognize that each of their contributions are important. So we do have, for example, all contributors spot. So if people fix a bug, they immediately get recognized for fixing bug. If people are translating, they get recognized for translation. But also people who are driving forward these kind of work are given opportunity to chair working groups. So people can chair working groups on the areas of work that they are leading on, and they get recognized. We have an afterward section in the book where we make sure that we list them as leaders. We also have sub-projects that are informal sub-projects. People say, oh, let's meet together and talk about open source AI. It's not a functional working group, but it's a group of people who are consistently meeting and talking about it. So we want to give them some space to be recognized for that kind of work. We also have, for example, a fireside chat where we bring these people to have conversation in the open and be recognized as experts. So there's a lot of recognition work that's going on. Talking about career itself, there have been a lot of community members that have gone on to gain jobs in the Turing Institute. And then we also have community members who we have worked with to apply for fellowships. So Drea and Melissa are both Software Sustainability Institute fellows with OLS, which is another organization that I am part of. So there are a lot of different kinds of work that we are doing. We're also applying for funds now. Of course, we've not been fully successful because there's not much opportunity for us to apply for open source funds. But when we do, these are so highly competitive that we have just not gained any. But recently, we received some funding from Society of RSC to support our accessibility chair, Liz Hare, to run workshop on accessibility for visually impaired researchers. So there are different kinds of things we're trying to do. I often listen to your podcast to hear what people are doing and figure out if we can implement that in our work. So yeah, I'm all for recognition and being fair to our community and making sure that they're given the space that they need And the kind of recognition we're giving is meaningful for them. It's not just sufficient for me to say that I have given you shout out here, but actually recognizing, do you actually value it? Is it meaningful for you? And of course, going back to the point, it does not pay their rent. So at the end, we do need to figure out their committee members who are not engaging because their time is too precious and we're not able to compensate for that.
I want to go a bit deeper on that. So you noted that it doesn't pay their rent for contributors. That's accurate, right? A lot of open source work is work that you do on your spare time that may help your career or it may not. It's really, really difficult. Can you talk a bit about how you see that at the Turing Way? How do you make sure that it's not an extractive community, but actually supports the fundamental part of every single person's job, which is ultimately like feeding themselves and their families?
I believe that volunteerism has a huge role to play in building amazing amount of skills that we don't traditionally gain in education system. I personally don't think I would be here if I didn't have the opportunity to work with open source community in a volunteer capacity. Find my own passion, right? And what do I care for? Where do I think my work should go? What impact do I want to see in the world? And I get to choose that, right? Like when someone pays me, I often don't get to choose what I work on. Though, of course, luckily, I do get to choose a lot in my job, but it's not the classic case. So we want to make sure that the Turing Way provides the space for similar kind of conversation to happen that people want to have, that people have the freedom and choice to contribute and work on things that they find meaningful and that they see the impact of their work immediately. The part about compensating in money is a piece of work that we are doing in OLS. I could happily talk about more, but I do also see this world in organizations like the Turing Way, Turing Institute, but also universities where funding is towards a research. And also the organizations are not often set up to give out honoraria. So for example, our admin cost would be very, very high if we start giving money to everybody. But there is also recognition that students don't get paid a lot, so maybe we should pay them hourly fee. And there is some space for those kind of work. At the same time, we have also created accessibility grants. So if we are asking people to work with us during Book Dash, for instance, we want to make sure that they have access to childcare support or any kind of funding that they need during that period of time. So we've had community members who generally cannot contribute to the Turing Way on day-to-day basis, but they look forward to Book Dash because they know that they have support during that particular week. And we can do more of that. I think we're doing what we can with the system that we have. But just coming back to organization like OLS, which is a nonprofit grassroots community, we have an infrastructure that we have built with the mentality that we want to use it to be able to recompense our committee members. And since we got the money in 2021, we've been able to pay our speakers, our mentors, our mentees. But that's a very privileged space. And also, we don't have infinite number of money. We will run out of that money and we will have to apologize to our community and say, sorry, we cannot any longer pay you. But at the moment, we can and we want to keep that culture going. And as a small organization, OLS is looking for what does that look like for us to be sustainable that way.
I would love to talk about that more and also to talk about, I mean, you mentioned AI at the beginning. It'd be really cool to dive into that. There's a whole ton of stuff that we didn't get to as an actual content of the Turing Way, for which I apologize. That's just how it's going to have to be because we are running up on time. So if I go to the Turing Way website now, I see the document, which is really, really useful. What I don't see is a blog or like, here's how you get involved in like updates that have been happening recently. Can you tell me where I can track that sort of progress?
Lee Steele is our research community manager, and she would be happy that you're asking this question because she keeps asking me this question. When are we having our website? We're waiting on our website, but she has created a start page where there's a specific call out for how people can get involved. We have monthly newsletter where we share out information for what's happening and what to look forward to. We have a Slack channel where people are talking on a day-to-day basis. We also have X, Twitter, Mastodon, where we try to amplify our words, but people are experimenting with LinkedIn because that's the cool space that we all should be, apparently. So we do have these social media spaces where people can find us and get involved. Slack is probably the easiest way if people feel okay with using proprietary chat system. it's just has worked really well for us.
All right. Thank you so much. Where can people follow you on the web?
My website. It's not up to date, but that's where I have centralized who I am, what I do, how to get in touch with me, where to follow me, and where to talk to me. In what languages? I don't think I speak a lot of language, but it just always helps people to see some representation of Hindi.
Awesome. Hindi is a very small language too. There's almost no resources for it whatsoever. Super cool. Thank you so much for coming on. This was excellent. Don't leave yet. Now we have the part of the show called Spotlight, where we highlight other people or projects that we think just need a little bit of light or love shed on them. My spotlight today is going to be the Montpelier Library System, but surprise, not Montpelier, Vermont, although it also has a wonderful library system. Montpelier, Ohio is also a place. And as I was driving across the country last week, I found out that Montpelier, Ohio exists. And where would I go in Montpelier to learn more about it? Obviously, the library, where the librarians were super helpful and awesome. If you ever want to just learn about a small town, go to the library and ask, do you have anything on your town that I could learn about? They gave me a book. It's very exciting. I'm looking forward to reading it. Montpelier was probably founded by Vermonters too, so that's just really, really cool. Local libraries are the best. Support them as much as you can. That's my spotlight today. Malvika, what's yours?
My spotlight is on a person called Laura Ondari. Laura is a wonderful podcaster herself, and I really wanted to shout out to her podcast called the Science in Real Life podcast. That brings together different people in STEM career to talk about their realities. She features a lot of African researchers, and she wants to make sure that this podcast serves towards telling diverse stories of people in science and retain them in science. She's also steering committee for Bioinformatics Hub of Kenya initiative, which we call our daughter initiative from OLS. It came out of our first cohort, and it's run by a wonderful group of people. Please check her podcast out. It would make me and her very happy.
Love that. Thank you so much. Listeners, if you enjoyed this podcast, do let us know. You can email us at podcast@sustainoss.org. That'll go to all the hosts, ask any questions, send any death threats, have a good time. Don't send death threats. If you want to talk to me and suggest other podcasts or whatever, richard@sustainoss.org also works. Rate this episode on Apple and Spotify with 5 stars or whatever the rating system is on the particular platform that you're listening to it. If you want another platform, let me know. Please follow us on Mastodon and on Blue Sky and on LinkedIn. Also, we have a Discourse, that's sustainoss.org, where you can talk to other people in the community. Really good place to drop stuff if you just want thoughts, because there are a lot more lurkers than you would think. So please join us there. If you want to see the show notes for this episode, go to podcast.sustainoss.org. And if you would like to hear more episodes in the future, talk to your funders or your boss or your wallet and go to opencollective.com/sustainoss. And please donate some money, because this is entirely funded by, I guess, you in the future, inshallah. So that would be really, really dope. Thank you so much for listening. Malvika, thank you so much for coming on. This is a great conversation. I really enjoyed learning more about the Turing Way and asking hard questions and being like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, that makes sense. You thought about that. So thanks again. And I hope it continues to grow and wend, I guess.
Thank you so much. This was a really delightful conversation to end my year with.
Woohoo! Happy holidays.